Very well then. What we have on the altar tonight is the Dharma wheel, or the Dharma chakra. And what that is a depiction of the Eightfold Path, the means by which the Buddha said one can come to the end of suffering, achieve the cessation of suffering. And there are three meditative aspects, two wisdom aspects, and three aspects having to do with action in the world. So the meditative aspects are learning to calm and concentrate the mind, exerting skillful effort toward this end, and the cultivation of mindfulness. Okay. So when the mind is bright and clear and calm, and the effort is positive, you know, but inclined toward the goal of the cessation of suffering. Okay. There's mindfulness, there's clarity of mind, there's right effort. Then what that does is sort of fertilize the soil for the arising of the wisdom factors. Okay. The ability to gain insights into not only how things are, but why things are the way they are, including why we are the way we are, and why our minds function in the way they do, and why our minds construct reality in the way they do. And out of those insights into the nature of being, the nature of self, sort of how we all go about co-creating our own realities, okay, there arises insight into intention, which is the ability to, before one speaks or acts, to be able to discern one's own motives. What is it that is, you know, that is leading you to say something or to do something? The more insightful one can become about your motives before speaking or acting, the more likely you are to be able to speak or act in a way that is skillful, or that leads towards the cessation of suffering. And the more unlikely you'll be to say or do something that is harmful, that is going to create suffering for yourself or others. So those three factors, when you, whenever you go into a wad in Thailand or a temple, certainly in Southeast Asia, you usually find three things on the altar. Okay. You'll find a candle, find incense, and you'll find a flower or flowers. The incense represents the meditative factors. The concentration of the mind, the calming of the mind, the ability of the mind to know at a deep level the nature of our spiritual self. The candle represents the wisdom factors, okay, the light of wisdom. The flower represents fruition. The fruition of the meditative factors creating the fertile soil for the arising of the wisdom factors. So we have samadhi, the meditative factors, panya, the wisdom factors, and then the three last factors, skillful speech, action, and way of being, way of life. Sometimes it's also translated as livelihood, but it has to do with how you make your, how one makes one's way in the world overall. Okay. So this evening we're looking at the first of those three sila factors, the fruition factors, how the wisdom matures into wise speech, wise action, and wise way of life. The Buddha gave this teaching, and he was pretty explicit about the various aspects of sila, because he really wanted folks to get it right. Okay. And so over the course of his talks, over the years, he came up with a kind of a litmus test, a set of criteria for evaluating speech for evaluating the speech that you utter to others, for evaluating the speech that others utter to you. And sometimes the one that's overlooked a lot, but for me in some ways it's probably the most important, how do we speak to ourselves? It's that voice in there, you know? What is it telling us about who we are? What tone of voice is it using? How do we regard ourselves? Really, really important criteria. Because whether it's evaluating your own speech or evaluating the speech of others, it gives real, transparent insight into state of mind. You know, where is this person coming? Where am I coming from when I speak? Where is another person coming from when they speak? Where am I coming from when I regard myself? Among the anthropologists and the linguists, there's been this debate going on for a long, long time now about whether we all perceive a common reality, but our culture causes us to interpret the common reality in different ways. And then there's another point of view that says, no, that language is so critical to the creation of perception. If you come from a culture with a very different kind of language structure, then you basically perceive a different physical world. In other words, the idea that we think in words, and that as we think in words, so do we construe our reality. And so, you know, when we're looking at the five skandhas, the aggregates that make up self, right? We had sensory input, hearing a sound, in this case, hearing a word, okay? And then understanding that word to describe a thing, and then bringing up memories of that thing, right? Starts with a word, right? Starts with the perception of what that thing is. And so what the Buddha says is, this is one of the keys to the kingdom. This is one of the means by which we become free, by which we cease to generate negative karma and instead begin to free ourselves and others by the way we speak and the way we listen. So he said, there are these factors that you should attend to when you are preparing to speak or when you hear others speaking. So we'll take it from the standpoint of intending to speak, and before doing so, engaging the Dharma to reflect on your intentions. First is my speech beneficially intended? Okay. Or is it maliciously intended? Is the intention of the speech to do good, to make some kind of positive contribution, to bring happiness or peace to oneself or others? Or is it instead to do harm? What you'll see from the handout is that I have all these laid out as continuum, right? Rather than binary, rather than skillful, unskillful, rather than beneficial or malicious. Because as we see when we look at this, more often than we may want to acknowledge or understand, it really is a continuum. There can be a mixture. It may be mostly beneficially intended, okay, but there may be a little hook in there someplace, you know. Maybe having some kind of Dharma conversation or other, you can be trying to convey understanding and whatnot, but there may be a little Dharma gotcha in there too, right? You kind of want to show that your chops are a little better than whoever it is you're talking to. So, got to look for the mixture. Is the intended speech useful? Does it serve a constructive purpose? Or instead, is it simply idle gossip and chatter? And the Buddha said, beware of idle gossip and chatter. on chatter because it tends to be mindless speech. And when the speech is mindless, you can do considerable harm without necessarily intending to, okay? Just by a thoughtless or a careless word. Joseph Goldstein said one time that in order to gain more insight into his own speech, that he vowed to not say anything about anybody who wasn't present. Not to say anything about anyone who wasn't there. And he said he went through the day in almost total silence. So much of our speech is about others, people who aren't there. Is the speech truthful or untruthful? There's a philosopher named Sisla Bach, who's written some really intriguing books on the subject. One was called Lying, and another was called Secrets. And what she was saying is, in her book on lying, she said there's a vast continuum between, you know, a lie, which is a deliberate untruth, which is saying something that one knows not to be true in order to create a false impression, versus simply not saying what you know to be true but not flat out lying in order to create a certain impression, versus emphasizing some aspects of truth while dampening others in order to, again, to manipulate one's understanding. There is quite a continuum there. Your speech can be beneficially intended, it can be useful, it can be truthful, but it may not be the right time to say it. Okay. That's another criteria. Timing can be really important. Okay. And then fifthly, matters of style. Kind words, kindly said, or harsh words, harshly said. We know that when someone is angry or afraid, it's when they're most likely to speak unskillfully. We know that from our own experience. We know that when we experience the speech of others. Okay. So being able to discern intent, where are they coming from, right? It gives you the creeps when somebody is speaking harshly and angrily and with the evident intent to do harm, right? Can do tremendous harm with words, just as they can have a powerful healing effect. So I think we're probably going to spend, you know, a few sessions looking at these dimensions a little more closely. But what I wanted to do tonight with just sort of this overview time is I wanted to kind of bring this teaching home, if possible. And so here's what I want us to do. Just a couple of minutes, I want us to break up into groups of about four. And having done so, what I want you to do is to go around your group and each of you take about 4 or 5 minutes, and I want you to describe sometime over the last year or so when you spoke unskillfully. What was it about? How did it feel? What was the effect on you and others? So each of you has 2.5 minutes to do that. And then you have another 2.5 minutes to reflect on a time when you did speak skillfully. Reflecting on it, when things went well, okay? And then we're gonna take a few minutes after we finish that exercise to share what came up for us, all right? So let's do that. Let's get into groups of four now. Thank you.
I'm I'm not too much. I you.
What I want to do now, quickly actually, is to go around the room. I'm going to ask each group if somebody or more than one person in the group will report very briefly, after reflecting just for a moment on of all the stories that each of you had to tell about skillful and unskillful communication, what were some of the commonalities that arose? What were some commonalities that arose with regard to unskillful speech? And what were some commonalities that arose with regard to skillful speech? Whether it had to do with a subject matter like, politics, or anything else, but what made all of your stories about unskillful and skillful speech similar? So over here, please. Hang on, everybody. Can't hear. Please.
So one of the first things that we really noted about our group is that speaking from a place of anger or being in being sort of riled up was often some way, shape, or form woven throughout the unskillful.
Yes.
And when you were challenging us about this question, I think the opposite that we certainly found is just taking a minute, counting to five, whatever it is, to just pause and either take a different path than we might have taken or choose to disengage or not engage.
Yes. Thank you. So can't overemphasize that point. Powerful emotions are a wild horse. My friend Wes Nisker sometimes says, words are in the saddle and ride mankind, And if the horse is wild and undirected, you're going to go right into the ditch. Thank you so much. I appreciate that. Over here.
Well, some correspondence. There, one that we talked about how once a flash emotion like anger gets going, once the cat's out of the bag, it's too late.
Off to the races.
Be sensitive to before it's really, coming on, before it's completely coming on to
yes.
any chance. And a personal observation, I've noticed that relationships between mothers and daughters are very complicated.
Oh, yeah.
Another thing was, that things are very situational.
Yes.
And, you can't make a rule about it. Probably the biggest thing is being sensitive to where the other person's at and knowing them, because you could do one thing with one person and another with,
Beautiful, thank you. All communication is contextual, actually. We've taught that over and over. So here, anything to share?
Even though our unskillful situations were all different, one thing that made them they shared were they were with people that we were really familiar with.
Yes, very good.
So sometimes it's easier to be unskillful
yes.
with those that we're
yes.
closest to.
Yes, my wife always says, "Well, it's a real gesture of intimacy when I get mad at you."
I just think that our unskillful was always rooted in the ego.
Uh-huh.
Ego. And our skillful was again rooted in that sensitive response to the humanness of other people involved.
Yeah.
Who were just like us.
Exactly. Thank you so much. Right. When it's self-centered is when we tend to get in trouble. When you see or hear the other in yourself, and vice versa, it's a different story.
So the same thing, we, all of our unskillful situations were with family, and,
blessing and a curse.
And then also, it seemed like some of our most skillful times when we were silent, listening to
yes.
another person.
Good. Thank you.
How difficult it is to be skillful with difficult people. Mothers.
Yes.
Really old melodies.
Right. Thank you. You got it. There's always somebody out there that's going to push your buttons, you know. When Joseph Goldstein was teaching metta practice once, he said, one of the ways that you know you haven't quite got it yet is when you find yourself wishing somebody else metta, and you say, may you cease your annoying ways. So, here.
Yeah, we all decided that the more we can practice sitting, the more able we're able to be more responding
yep.
than reacting to others, and to slow down and to really intentionally think about it.
Thank you. Want to reiterate that so everyone can get it, which is that the wisest and most powerful speech almost always emanates from a place of silence. From the wise silence that precedes the speech.
I think we decided that unskillful communication comes from thinking that one is right.
Speak a little louder, please.
Unskillful communication comes from the belief that one is right. And the skillfulness, I'm still working on that. I like the idea. I like the idea of a 30-second break before you speak, but I think that skillful communication is perhaps rooted in compassion.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Sean. Wow. But such richness, you know, I wish we had another hour to work over this. So we're going to have another few sessions where we do. What I'm going to ask you to do is take that handout home with you and see how it works over the course of the week, you know. See if you can commit those factors to memory. See if you can bring them to mind before you speak. You may find out some interesting things. Number one, you may speak less.
Yeah.
There may be more silence in your home. It may be more thoughtful.
Yeah.
And what you find that you don't, as you inevitably will, listen to the voice that reminds you that you have. Is it the voice of a friend or a friend? Let's take this one moment and settle back once again into our sitting posture. May we live with ease and know ease of well-being. May we be safe from all inner and outer harm. May we listen with care to the words of others and hear the words that are unspoken. May we speak with clarity and compassion for the benefit of all. May we rest in silence and stillness, at peace with things as they are. May we awaken and be free. Thanks, everybody, and have a good week.
Thank you.